Can I pause you there? What I'd like to do for a few minutes is just to take one or two comments, questions, observations, and then move on to a bit more that I'd like to say. But would anyone like to offer us a thought or a comment? David?
What's fascinated me as you've been talking about choice and us choosing is how is that affected by the prior belief that we are chosen, that it is God who does the choosing?
I mean, it's quite interesting because the bits of Bible I'm going to look at next are about Jesus choosing us, not about us choosing him. Which is not a plant, really. But that's absolutely true, isn't it? And the emphasis on us and our individual choice is so strong in society that actually the idea that I am chosen by God for a particular task and to be a particular sort of person is totally countercultural. And we're swimming against that all the time. That's the issue. And interestingly, as we look through Scripture, in many instances, people are saying, no, I don't want to be chosen, thanks. You know? I mean, Moses and the burning bush. Me? Why me? I can't speak, you know? The call of Jeremiah is classical, isn't it? And many of the prophetic calls, they're actually saying, no, don't want to do that. And you know, however you interpret the Damascus Road experience, Paul was not very keen initially. So the idea that we are chosen both as persons and as ministers from someone or something outside us is very countercultural, a very difficult tide to swim against, really. Thank you. I'll come to a couple of choosing passages in a minute. Any others?
I just wonder if we are bold enough in our preaching to say the consequences of the wrong choice.
I think we're not, are we? Clearly. And I mean, Joshua's pretty clear, you know. This is a really difficult choice. If you make the wrong one, you're in shtuck, really. But we're not. And I think the danger is that I was having a conversation with John before we started about Pelagianism. I mean, you know, the English heresy, whether Pelagius was Pelagian or not, is just try a little bit harder, folks. You know, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps a bit and it'll all be okay, won't it? The idea that there are radical and dangerous choices to make is something we find very difficult to cope with, really. I saw John's hand next.
Yes, I think one of the things that we face in Anglicanism is that our church, certainly in Cranmer's time, was the sort of church that, I think it was O'Donovan you said, was looking for among the people that he was reaching out to, in that Cranmer could think about the people of his time as a nation who all thought much the same way. And many of his prayers are prayers, national prayers, where he is speaking in a group way, including confessions. We are apt to see them as individual confessions and look at things in an individual way because that's the way we are now. Sometime, I suspect, during the 19th century or the Enlightenment, the change gradually started to happen from group church to individual faith.
Yes, thank you. I mean, it's interesting we're celebrating the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible this year because coming out of the same era and shaping the way we understood ourselves and the nation and Christianity, King James Version had a huge impact on us. I mean, I suspect a lot of that change, John, was happening during the time of the Industrial Revolution. And I suspect a lot of it, although some of it is Enlightenment philosophy-led, a lot of it is actually consumer-led. Because if you can have choices of the sorts of things you have in your house and the sorts of things you wear, that sort of spills over philosophically and religiously, doesn't it, to imply you can choose everything. And I suspect it's led by the multiplicity of goods we have. And also, you know, for Cranmer and for Queen Elizabeth, really, uniformity was the good thing because it held us together. And in a sense, as long as everybody would sign up and, you know, you go to the same church and say the same thing, she was happy. Now we encourage diversity. Diversity is a good thing. And maybe it is. You know, God has given us a deeply diverse creation, and we need to celebrate that and work with that. But it needs to be balanced with some unifying factor and some understanding of what common factors there are in human choice and human truth. Who'd like another go? You probably need to come this way a bit if you're going to reach the microphone signal.
Thank you. It's just I found it rather interesting in the reading of Jeremiah that it was a vengeful God, and I think that sometimes we forget that is still the same God that we have got now. And maybe sometimes we have not got a sense of the urgency for the gospel and the fact that we are, in fact, in the hands of sometimes a vengeful God.
I don't like the word vengeful much. He's scary sometimes. What? Yeah. Just, okay, someone suggests just. Yeah, I like the word just. I'm going to talk a bit about just after the break as well. He's a scary God. I'll go with that. And he's one certainly in parts of Scripture, but not all of Scripture, who seems intolerant of people going after what they believe to be other truths. And I think right at the heart of his concept of the Old Testament concept of justice and vengeance is truth. Because I think what the prophets are implying is that it is dangerous for you to get it wrong. Not necessarily because God will come down with a heavy boot, although that's part of the imagery they sometimes use, but also because you're going to get your life in an awful tangle if you don't live by the wisdom that is God's wisdom. We'll take one more, then I'll go on a bit longer. Yeah?
I don't know if I can find the right words, but I'm struggling between choice, which to me means selectivity, and unity. I can't balance the two.
It's really difficult to do that, isn't it? And to do that needs a huge amount of tolerance, insight, understanding, etc. On one level, it's easy. You know, if we both go in there for lunch and I choose steak and you choose fish, that's fine. You know, we can sit and eat our meal together happily. But if you refuse to eat the steak because of the way the animal has been killed and therefore won't sit with me, then that's beginning to put a bit of a wedge between us, isn't it? Quite interestingly. And then if you won't speak to me because we have very different political views, then we've made our choices, but actually that's driven us a long way apart and we're far from being united. And how, I mean, it's been really instructive in Portsmouth this last week because we've been commemorating the 70th anniversary of the Blitz. And we read out the names last Monday of all the 1,900 people, whatever, who were killed in the Portsmouth Blitz. You know, some are 2-year-olds, some are 90-year-olds. And what's been quite instructive about that is a lot of people have been saying, we've got to find other ways of reconciling differences. You know, just bombing the hell out of each other didn't work, did it? And it's the perpetual human problem of finding a way to be together and at the same time recognising that we are different is impossible. Maybe we've swung too far, you know, one way in the pendulum. We imposed unity in the 16th century, and we imposed unity mostly by killing people if they didn't agree with us. Well, that gets rid of the problem. Now we've got huge diversity. And in the huge diversity, it looks as if we're spinning apart as a united society, nationally, let alone internationally. Let me go on a little bit, because I want to look at a couple of other biblical passages. I'm going to switch microphones for the...